Blog hey, man, Talk Radio.
Man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushes and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushes, I would help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. We got to come down on both of them at the same time. What is this whole thing to work for?
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
What's up, y'all? You know what time it is. This is Citizen Payne. And, you know, we missed you last week. But still, the plight of our people continues. I'm Kay's son. And I'm with my friends, Wayne Gilman, the newsman, Byron Saunders, the historian. And I'm Citizen Payne, Eric Payne. So I've been thinking about community service, right? And some other things. That movie, The Mac, Willie Hutch, brother's going to work it out. And we haven't been on since, week before last. Some things were happening. But I was filling out some paperwork or writing some stuff, and I was talking a lot about community service and what you do to give back to the community. And there's this notion in Jersey, you know, with all the cannabis legislation now, things becoming legal, social equity, and it's not really social equity, you know, as from what I'm hearing about people trying to get into this business. It's supposed to be a way to make up for people who've been arrested for something that's now legal, right? So that's where the social equity aspect comes in. But that's community service, right? You're serving the community for people who've been wrongly imprisoned for something that should have been legal probably a long time ago. And certainly there's been a disparity in the way that that law in particular was enforced. So that's why we have the social equity aspect, thus my point about community service. But you also have a responsibility to your community to say maybe to get vaccinated. I'm just saying, you know, I would be the last person to tell people what they need to do with their bodies. And as a black man in America, and I'm sure the brothers will confer that we have more than a little reasoning, more than a little. I'm trying to find the right words to say that we just don't trust the United States through previous experience. But there it is. So much for the poetry and the politics and being diplomatic. But that's the truth, you know. And so we don't normally trust it, but you know, like I've said before, when you start seeing the people in positions of power, and if you have connections with people who have access to power, access to information, and also, too, we've got a lot more black doctors nowadays, obviously, in this current modern-day America, that can give us a real assessment of whether certain things are beneficial or not to our community. So when those people try to give us guidance, we should listen to them and not just automatically write them off as being part of the establishment, or just use your basic own common sense. Like, right, you know, if enough of the world is talking about people dying, almost 1 million people in the United States, I would say by now, it might be something you want to pay attention to. I do agree that things that the wool can be pulled over the eyes of a lot of people in the world, that the whole world can be fooled. And only a certain people can know what's really the truth in the history of the world, if I talk in a broader context, right? So in that, that the whole world, I forgot my point that I was trying to make, just rambling. Man, I was getting too esoteric with it, too out there, abstract with it. forgot my own daggone point. Ain't that some? It is not. But what I'm saying is you got to get vaccinated. Just trust those who that we put in positions that we can trust. And, you know, listen to them, you know, because it's something that seems to be kind of deadly. All I was saying, you know, the whole world has been exposed to this thing. And so everybody can see common sense. All you got to do is look around the world, despite the fact that, you know, it is possible to fool everybody, fool a lot of people. But there are ways that you can see through the truth. I mean, if you use your own common sense. And so I think that's the point I was initially trying to make, you know, besides the fact that some people are trying to use people that are less informed. I'm not going to say ignorant, although some of them are ignorant. People are trying to use people that are less informed for their own purposes, you know, meaning that those I'll just come out and say it, those people that are elected to office and have been entrusted with their constituents' trust, some of them are not doing the right thing by their constituents. And some of them, I would think, would also be Republicans, the way it looks now. So, you know, we got to, I'm sorry, I'm distracted by this woman, Dante Wright's mother. The ex-police officer on trial for killing Dante Wright. Oh, that's the woman that was the cop that said she had taser, and shot the dude. And they have footage of her on the ground, all distraught and everything. The woman, the female cop who actually shot him. Yeah, taser in this picture. The taser is clearly on her left, and the other gun was on her right. So how do you make that mistake? I don't know. Maybe she was right-handed. I don't know. But let me bring in Brother Wayne Gilman here. I know he's got some comments on the news, particularly what's going on in New York and ex-governor. Wayne Gilman, I think it's just me and you tonight, Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. How you doing tonight, Wayne?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes. Loud and clear, my brother.
Okay, great, great. I wasn't sure. I'm hanging in here, man. I'm listening to you, and I'm concerned about the state of our country and all that is going on. I mean, it's depressing every time that you tune into cable TV news, and you could see the polarization, you know, between the East Coast, the West Coast, the South and the North, the white and the black, the Asian, this, that, and the other. We've come a long way as a country, but we are so close to losing it, you know, to going back more than 100 years in terms of whatever gains that we've made as a people. I speak of our people of color, and I'm quite concerned. I'm concerned about the democracy that we have, that most of us have got to be ready for whatever impending fights to come ahead in the year 22 and 24. I don't want to think, I know that we have in some segments of our society a vacuum, but it's so important that they get the right information. And, you know, you mentioned a very salient point a moment ago about, you know, people of color who are degreed and credentialed and should be respected for their value, but some who actually hold that position sometimes are not necessarily thinking in the interest of the community. They're just thinking of themselves. I speak most notably of the doctor in the state of Florida who basically is Governor DeSantis' puppet. Yeah.
I was actually referring to a Republican.
Well, yeah, he's a Republican. I'm certain of that. I don't know the doctor's political affiliation, but everything that he's been saying seems to be in marked step with what the Republican Party's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it's bad. I mean, I see that. And then on my way in the house here this afternoon, I was listening to the first black nurse in the New York State area, Jamaica National, who works at North Shore Hospital out there in the island. And she took the first injection, and she was commenting about her frustration trying to get our people to basically not look at theories and stuff that you may see on the internet. that this situation with this pandemic is real, you know. So we have that fight. And, you know, some of us are lost in the sauce, but we cannot afford to really, you know, be ignorant about this. I was grappling with a situation personally a couple of weeks ago. Family and friends had invited me down to the Maryland area, and it's a pity. I was hoping that Byron would have been on tonight because I'm certain he would know of this place in Tacoma Park, or perhaps, you know, I know you spent a lot of time in Washington. But there's this famous nightclub. And I tell you, to be honest with you, I have been reluctant to go out in social gatherings where I don't know anyone. You know, it's one thing to be thoroughly vaccinated and boosted and all that stuff, you know, and be among friends and family, you know, because you think everybody's of like mind. But one of my cousins, her husband was involved in this high school reunion thing, and it was at this place. We went, had a nice time, but, you know, again, I was exposed to people largely of our own community who felt we're past this bubble now. This is just before the variant of a monochrome became public. So, and my belief is this new variant had been spreading throughout the United States long before it was announced in South Africa, you know. And I just said to myself, you know, I let my guard down. I should have been strong enough to tell my family, if this is what they wanted to do, I was not going to be part of that agenda. But they threw this at me at the last minute, and I heard the, oh, most of us are vaccinated, blah, 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 blah. But it stops and makes you think. Right now my voice is a little raspy. And again, I don't want to jump to conclusions. I need to go and actually take a flu shot, but I've done everything else with regard to COVID. But you know, it's very troubling, and the numbers are rising, particularly here in the Northeast in New York. You know, the right. Hospitals are nowhere near where they were a year ago. But who wants to go through that again?
Right, right, exactly. You know, I also think it's a like you were saying, a east, west, north, south, whatever. It's a regional thing also, too. And I think that where our people live, and, you know, again, in case we have a couple of white listeners and maybe a broader, diverse listening public, we only differentiate because there is a difference in the treatment and the life lived by black and brown people and white people. So I say that to point out the disparities. And so I say, when I say our people, black people are that live in some of these states where you have more of an open or less of a belief about the severity of the pandemic for whatever reason. And I definitely believe that some of these people in some of these areas, judged by their other politics about things, that part of their belief is basically kind of a little bit racial along the lines. You know, particularly, I said this before on the air, that I noticed that when we really noticed the whole thing about Michigan, and they were kind of protesting the mask, anti-mask thing, when that first protest, where you had the big protest with a bunch of militia guys showing up to Michigan State House with their weapons. That was around the time that the fact came out that a lot of frontline people and the majority of people that were getting sick at the time were the frontline people who happened to be black and brown people doing, you know, jobs like bus drivers, jobs that you come in contact with the public or service jobs a lot, right? So It seemed as though the idea of that caused a lot of people in some of these areas to say, well, hey, why should I be concerned with this group? Or maybe it's not even racial, maybe someone else, when I want to be concerned about myself. And I'm so so emphatic and so passionate about it, I'm actually going to go down to the State House with my weapons because these people are talking about making me wear a mask. I don't understand where the connection is, but I'm not even going to get off into that. The point I'm trying to make here is that when we have black people living in some of these areas where it's predominantly the state government, like Texas and these other Republican states where they reject and they're trying to oppose anything democratic, and that would include the virus, any kind of suggestions we Democrats would have to combat the virus, then I think that a lot of our people who happen to be black and brown are going to find themselves in a tough spot, you know, and that leads me to Texas and their redistricting attempt, because a lot of people seem to be so surprised. But what else do we expect from one of the states that gave us the Juneteenth holiday? And meaning that Texas did not tell the slaves they were free until another year or two. I think it was Texas and Oklahoma. So now all these centuries later that they want to try to redistrict the state so black and brown people get less power and white people get more power. This is Republicans, what they're doing. Why is it a surprise in modern-day America, certainly this modern-day America, when it clearly is, and here's my problem again with the Democrats, we can systematically see the Republican Party in each state trying to gain control. You guys, you remember how I say, Wayne, like, and you know this, us, you and I being guys from up around this area, we recognize when the fix is in, when the boss or Trump, the mob boss, is trying to get all his people in the right places. Remember I used to say that? He's just right. Trying to get us people in the right places that are going to okay his little silent coup. I said that about when my mother was still alive. In terms of what he was doing, trying to put the right people in the right place. And now, again, they say that the Republican Party is gearing up to do that again in the next election. A guy was just reporting the other night on one of the shows that we watch on MSNBC. I'm going to talk about MSNBC and Fox in a minute. But he was talking about now they're just trying to do it a little bit more legally. You know, now the way they steal the election, they're trying to do it a little bit more politely, you know, just by controlling the people who will be in these positions in these various states, like the gentleman in Georgia who refused to go along with Donald Trump and trying to find the 11,700 whatever votes. So now they're finding people who actually would be willing to subvert the Constitution or the law of the land, which is even more chilling. So, and the Democrats seeing this happen is my point. Don't seem to be making any overt moves. You know, don't seem like people are complaining about Biden not pushing voting rights and making sure that's ahead on the agenda. But, you know, he's got a lot of other things on the agenda. And this is where the weeds of politics and the weeds of government and how our society is supposed to be governed, this is where when you don't have a knowledge of that, like many of these people don't, like I'm sure 90% of the people who ran up on the Capitol that day, they're able they're vulnerable to be taken advantage of and to be led astray and get frustrated. And they also get frustrated because they don't understand why stuff is taking so long. You know, people don't understand why Joe Biden can't put the voting rights. Well, he's trying to get the Build Back Better financial plan through first, and then he's got to work on the next thing. So it is an art form in the Congress. And that's why you need kind of smart people, particularly if they have to play this chess game of, you know, I got to get votes here for this. I got to bargain over here for this person to do this. What, you know what I mean? So a lot of people don't understand that process when you get into the actual machinations of governing, and they get frustrated. And that's also, too, what I think leads to, you know, a lot of the people being dissatisfied, other than I'm talking about the people who aren't just used to the country just being a straight-up white supremacist society where they could just, you know, do whatever. I'm talking about people who happen to be white who are reasonable and don't believe in that particular system of a society. You know, it's hard for people if you even reject that, you know. And, you know, not for nothing, how many people want to give up their advantages? You know, I mean, you know, that's why you have right-wing.
That's why you have a problem right there.
And they might not be, you know, actively, you know, they might not be actively pushing the cause, but they're just reaping the benefits. So they just let me be quiet. I want to help you, my black friend, but not at my benefit. You know, I need all the perks
exactly.
I can get in this fight. You know, and it's messed up that the society is like that. You know, that so many people are, you know, that the wealthiest people are 1-2%, and everybody else, the rest of the 99%, where everybody's basically fighting for crumbs in that environment. And also, you know, the actual intimidation aspect that you would get in that environment. When, you know, I don't know if you were watching the news earlier today. I was watching it earlier today when they were talking about the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And they're just, you know, catching all kind of hell every which way. Some are trying to let it ride out. Some are trying to be silent about their things. Some are obviously quitting because of the safety factor. And these are people that they're getting death threats on themselves. So, you know, it's a tough thing to be in that position, you know, and that happens when, you know, people aren't informed. You know, you get these crazy things going on, you know, so.
Well, I happen to agree. I mean, it's unfortunate that the party, you know, even the aspect of the party of Lincoln, those people who are trying to bring about a meaningful reform, you know, that they're being waylaid by this subversive group
right.
that now seems to be part of the floor. You know,
right.
what they did to our beloved sister from, oh, God, my brain is mush, but from Minnesota.
Minnesota.
You know, Congress member, oh, God, I'm having a senior moment here.
You talk about the one
I
that
just
said
turned...
It? The one that said the crazy stuff was Boebert, and you talk about Ilhan.
Yeah, I'm talking about that incident. Yes, but the Congress member who she's been attacking all this time.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean,
Ilhan Omar,
there is
right.
clearly a need to remove people like Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Florida there. You know, the people. You know, the radicals. But
mm-hmm.
when you stop and look at the big picture and the kind of support that they're getting, you know, it just blows me away how now this seems to be part of acceptable behavior. It's okay to say things that are disingenuous about someone's culture, you know. If somebody's wearing a hijab, well, there must be something wrong with that person, because if she didn't shave her head, she should be wearing a wig. You know, she should be conforming to what is perceived to be the American standard. And the thing is, there's so many differences in our culture, you know, as Americans. But the problem is that people who are not familiar with the culture, you know, they turn around and they try to bring about an agenda that clearly is going to be combative to what we're trying to seek here to keep the place normal. And it's going to destroy, ultimately, democracy if we don't, you know, do things to just get conditions back in line and trying to inform people. You know, I was, and who I'm talking of is Representative Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, beautiful person, someone who's gone through a lot of strife just to get to this country and to be elected to represent, you know, people in her district, and she has to put up with this blatant racism. And she's been outspoken. She's ruffled a few feathers since she's gotten in, but sometimes that's what it takes, you know? That's the thing that just, you know, bothers me. But a couple of weeks ago, I was in a lawyer's office, and this gentleman happens to be a white person of Greek nationality, and I'm not clear on his political, because he seemed to be somewhat evasive. But we were talking about the whole political climate out here. And the one thing that he did say that made a lot of sense is that most of us who are just walking the streets are just ill-informed. Now, his perception is that a lot of these people who are elected, you know, they stay in office, those who you know, probably in his mind should be term limited. You know, they've made a career of it, and they're only out for themselves. Well, I don't think that's always the case, you know. But I one thing I have to agree with him is that there should be some sort of forum. I need to understand what bothers you about me, and I need to tell you what bothers me about you, you know? And if we can do that, you know, constructively.
What do you mean by that?
Having a forum and an open discussion to let people know, like what we're doing here on the air tonight. We've had people call in who don't necessarily agree with all the things that we espouse each week, and we had that just recently. And that person could be listening tonight. But the bottom line is, the only way we're going to understand and get ahead is if there's some sort of dialogue, because, you know, we're seconds away from shooting each other and trying to see if we could. What happened at that school in Michigan is uncalled for. The acquittal of Rittenhouse in Wisconsin, to me, is off the charts when you have a young black woman still in jail who tried to defend herself against a rapist, and yet, you know, to say, you talk about self-defense, she was faced with her life.
Who are you talking about?
Kaiser. I can't think of the young lady's first name. Her case is about to be aired soon. But the fact of the matter is that she's been, her last name is Kaiser. I'm trying to think of the, I want to say Cheryl. I could be wrong. I'll have to Google it. But the bottom line is, while Rittenhouse, you know, was allowed to walk free because they felt this was an act of self-defense, you know, how do you juxtapose and say that's okay when a young black woman who's now still in jail was being threatened by someone and she outright killed this person in an act of self-defense, you know? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's so many different situations out here that need to be deeply analyzed, you know? Yeah. But it is what it is, you know? I mean, this guy, I don't know if he's left the state. I mean, there was speculation that he was going to be moving to Florida because it's probably the only place he thinks he could be safe in, you know.
Who are you talking about? I'm sorry.
I'm talking about Rittenhouse. You know, the young man who found not guilty in the in that incident where he killed two young white men, you know, in Wisconsin.
So,
there's so many different situations like that just seem to get swept under the rug. I mean, you know, there are things that have come out that obviously that are glaring, and the jury was right. You know, I felt in a case in Georgia, you know, regardless of whether the defense wanted a bunch of bubbas on the panel, they knew how to vote in that, because it was, as long as there was memorial footage that they could play back and see visually what was going on, those three guys didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of being acquitted, you know. But
yeah,
not every day we have cameras rolling, you know.
Right.
What about the cases that fall through the cracks, you know? And
right.
And that's the thing that I find, you know, so difficult, and I just don't know what it's going to take to just turn the situation around, other than like what this gentleman said to me in his office about dialogue, you know. And I just got the sense, and again, I'm trying to paint a picture without anybody physically being there, but I got the sense that he didn't necessarily agree with all that would be considered the Democratic talking points, but he was at least honest enough when confronted with certain Republican talking points and things that go on and what they want and why they may have issues with the infrastructure and why they may have problems with Amazon coming to New York and stuff like that. You know, he was open about it, and I said,
they were open about what? About the Republicans' point of view or his issues with the Republicans?
Yeah. He was basically upholding, without identifying, because I think he might be independent, but the bottom line is he didn't identify, but he felt that, you know, the Republicans are not necessarily getting a fair shake. And I'm just saying, we've gone through 400 years of slavery, and just as we were able to witness the historic moment of 8 years of a black man running the country, we were set back 400 years with the election of Donald Trump. And I think it was toxic. There were times, you know, when your mom was still alive, we would sit and talk about the discomfort that we would feel, not knowing what the next day would bring, you know? I have a friend in Florida, and she's moving from Florida now because, and this is someone white, somebody I've known for a number of years, and she's moving out of the South, giving up a very comfortable existence because she cannot tolerate the nonsense that's going on there with the not wearing of masks, you know, the old little insurrection and movement. In fact, I wanted to get my boy Reggie Thomas on. I didn't know that we were going to be doing this like this, but DeSantis, I don't know if you read recently, that he's trying to come up with his own militia.
I saw that. Let me just address what you. Let me go back a little bit before we roll on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're talking about the guy that you're talking about. I often wonder, you know, when he says something like that, it doesn't feel the Republicans are getting a fair shake. I don't see how someone could objectively see the entire picture of what's gone on in the country last several years and believe that. But there are people who actually
feel that.
And I find, you know, a lot of people that are Trump supporters, and I think that a lot of white people that are used to our society being a certain way, and I could see them being so in their mind thinking this is normal, right, that I am in a society where I am the first-class citizen and everybody else is a second-class citizen that has darker skin. I could more realistically see that person having a skewed worldview because that's all they know than I can see a person, you say he's Greek, he's not from here, and he might be independent. But that worldview that he has suggests that he prefers a society in which there's this imbalance. And, you know, I break it down to just very childlike fifth grade shit. It's not fair. And if you could look at the situation and see that it's not fair, that there's not fair treatment amongst all people for whatever, you know, just basic fairness. We're not talking about all of the little complexities of life like you were talking about. There's a lot of issues that get weighed in or layered in within the racism, right? There's the sexism issue. There's the, you know, some people aren't really racist. They're sexist. Some people aren't really, well, I don't really hate those type of people. I hate these type of, so there's a lot of, or I'm really against just the elitist, the whole system. So there's and in that, there's people who take advantage of that. And that's where people who will get elected to certain positions and elected to be leaders of society are supposed to navigate people through that and see all of the idiosyncrasies and the nuances that might come with interpersonal relationships, much less an entire society, entire country. So the notion of electing individuals and term limits and all that, a lot of people don't even want to serve. I mean, there's people don't even know how the fucking process goes. So why should we think that they're going to want to serve in an office? You know, I mean, some people look at the job of being a cool politician as being like the lowest job you could do. And I guess just the definition that's been given to it by certain individuals. Yeah. And in within serving government and doing like anything else, that is high level, high power. Within that, there is the opportunity for the wrong type of individual to exploit the system. Yep. They're exposed to a lot of stuff. They're exposed to a lot of information, potential to make a lot of money, to have a lot of power, all of that stuff. You know, you gain the world and lose your soul, certain type of things. But that's why you elect certain type of individuals. That's why they go through the process so people can determine, does this person have the integrity, the temerity, to do the right thing, amongst all of that temptation. You know, I thought from time to time, you know, the temptation of saying, of us being the only ones in the room who will know about this, you know, like a murder or any other type of crime. And I thought about, often thought about Richard Nixon and at the time of Watergate, right? And
yeah.
He was talking about erasing the tape, and they didn't erase the tape or whatever, and the heat started coming, the shit started unraveling. But what if it didn't unravel? What if it, there were just the two or three people like Trump shit, you know, like Trump was trying to do? You get enough people that are down. It doesn't take a lot. Just a very few people that are down, the decision makers that are down to go forward with this plan. I mean, what if Nixon, he didn't make the tapes, or they were able to erase them or whatever, they would have gotten away with that, right? History would have been entirely different. So that's why we go through the process of trying to put individuals, and he was a lifelong elected official, public servant. If you look at over the course of his life and his life story,
right,
you might begin to see the development that led him to be that type of person. But there's nothing wrong. You have those type of people, and you have the other type of people who understand service. You know, the Bushes, you know, before Trump came along, George Bush was the worst president ever. But was he behaving that way? No. Was there an understanding within that family structure and the whole, what it used to be, polite racism or whatever in politics, where they understand the decorum, right? Understand the decorum and respect you should have and the reverence you should have for these halls and the offices that we're all holding here. You should at least understand that. We can achieve our little nefarious objectives in the same way, but we don't have to be beating people up and breaking down doors and having bedlam in the streets of our country, because that doesn't serve anybody's purpose. If there's chaos, none of us can make any money then. Excuse me, I'm not going to So that's what I'm saying about having the right individuals in there. When somebody talks about there should be term limits, yeah, maybe there should be. But maybe there shouldn't be. What happens if you have an individual in there that's doing the right thing, you know,
that's been serving for
20, 30 years, and they still have their faculties. If there's someone
– right.
Listen, at the end of the day, if their constituents keep sending them to office, then, you know, that's really good.
That's exactly – and I agree with you. I mean, just looking at your own family's history, I concur 1,000%. I think what this young man, he's like almost half my age. He's a lawyer. He was talking about how, you know, his parents came here, didn't have anything, blah, 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 you know. And I said, you know, your story is no different than mine. You came from one continent. Mine came from an island. But the difference is that you have been able to do things that perhaps my family could not. It's not to say that we would deny. I'm not saying that perhaps if I, you know, and there was a time in my life, I must say that I was actually trying to pursue a law degree. I'm not finished yet. I want to see if I can become a paralegal.
Was this guy white? You said this guy's
Greek,
right?
Yeah. He was, you know,
he's Greek,
he was Mediterranean. Wide. As far as I'm concerned, he's Greek. That's his nationality.
Okay. Well, that says it all right there.
And the thing is.
That says it all right there.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? It's just that we just, I was
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you do. Don't say you don't want to, because it's a fact whether you don't want it or not. That's a fact that the doors are going to be a little bit more open regardless
That's what I was, you know, but some people in that particular situation, they don't see it because they don't go through the stuff that we go through.
That's exactly
you know?
What I'm saying.
That's what bothers me.
They identify with that mindset. They don't see it because everything is big hunky-dory. You know what I'm saying? So what's the problem?
It's,
I don't see anything. And then I see that, you know, the Republicans aren't really getting a fair shake. It's like, yeah, that's easy for you to say. If everything's going good for you, and yeah, it's easy to say that when you're on the winning side. So you know what I'm saying. So that's why I say his perspective is skewed because he's coming into an area where he's already having an advantage, where he's already being welcomed merely by the way he looks. So he's going to have the freedom.
I tell you one thing, Eric.
Let me make this final point. The thing is that not necessarily that all of them come in that would fit his description are going to side with the Republicans or take that perspective. But
right.
The big thing is they have the luxury to look at it from that perspective. You feel me?
Yeah.
They have the luxury to look at it from a slightly skewed perspective. Well, it's okay for me, and it's kind of okay for you. So it probably is your own efforts that you're not getting it. But it's really good for me, even though none of that is my own efforts. You know, so.
Exactly. You know. And sometimes they get away with a lot of stuff until it's become so confusing, so ambiguous, so beyond, you know, defying logic. I mean, you referenced this earlier about the Cuomo situation with Chris and Andrew and all that, and I'm just saying to myself, imagine you or me, we had this, you know, job at CNN, and you know, and in fact, it's even a fitting not to use you again, and this is just something that is metaphorical. It's not, you know, fact. Obviously, you don't work on television cable and all that, but you have a cousin who's a sitting member of Congress, you know, in a very prestigious role. And then all of a sudden, you know, let's say out of nowhere there was some, you know, rhetoric going around that eventually it came down to the point where it affected your ability to do the work that you did, you know, and I'm saying this in the sense that from a black perspective, I think someone like you, if you were in Chris Cuomo's position, would have been removed a long time, wouldn't have even gotten an opportunity to stay there and say,
I was trying to help my brother,
blah, 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 yeah. You know, and all that business, which really has nothing to do with his job, but it's the perception, you know, it's the thing that you said nothing when all this was going on. You, in other words, you were able to ride the storm out, you know, and you knew full well you had access to information, and you knew to a certain extent there was when he was under, I'm talking about Andrew Cuomo, under in the fishbowl being watched by everybody, they pulled Chris off the air, you know.
Right.
But we, with us, you know, if it was
black
a situation where it was somebody of color, I am certain standard and practices would have marched our behinds out of whatever institution we were working for because we are who we are. And I'm sorry, I've seen it happen, you know.
Without a doubt.
I've witnessed this in my lifetime. So I'm not saying, you know, maybe the game has changed a little bit. But the bottom line is that some things just don't seem to ever change. And that's what bothers me about the way things are. You know, I'm not saying that somebody was right. I'm not defending, you know, in this situation. As I said, this is just, you know, an analysis of what I see that's going on. And I'm just saying, had the governor had been black, And the anchor who was a relative was black, and all this stuff was going on, you know, from a year ago or years back. This is nothing new, you know.
Certain standard
and practices would have removed us.
Yeah, that's not a question. We don't even need to discuss that, right? From our perspective, and probably it would prove to be a fact, probably 80% of the time, 90% of the time. We know that that's a fact. The bigger thing is I don't know how long it was going on. I just heard you saying it was been going on for a while. I just heard all this stuff just blew up, you know, over the news the past couple of weeks.
Last year or so, you know.
The whole thing about Chris doing stuff for his brother and the way it came out, I wasn't aware of that last year. I was aware of the trouble that Andrew Cuomo was having, but I wasn't aware. I know they pulled him off the air for whatever, but I wasn't aware to the extent or whatever the thing is that ended up getting him fired. That's now leading to his own accusations of sexual harassment. I wasn't aware of any of that. And also, too, he said it, you know, that's family. I saw one clip where he said, that's family. I'm going to try and help my brother when he was trying to explain away the first time when the thing that eventually got him fired first started brewing up a little bit. He tried to address it. you know, and apparently he wasn't, as we find out, he wasn't being fully truthful and forthright about everything, which is probably what got him totally fired. And then, you know, the rest of the stuff started happening. But I never heard about stuff to that extent a year ago.
Yeah, well, I don't want to, you know, call any names, but I mean, the thing is, this has been somewhat under the radar. And don't get me wrong, I was praising Andrew Cuomo at the height of our crisis here in New York. If anybody who exhibited, you know, presidential characteristics and qualities, it was him, you know? But the deal is there was another side of him, and I'm not here to convict him, you know, because this hasn't even gone to trial yet. But there's enough stuff out here, you know, and I go back a couple of terms with someone who worked with him closely. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there to see what was going on, but you hear enough stuff, you start to believe it. And, you know, as far as Chris is concerned, you know, my ex-father-in-law used to say all the time, my family, right or wrong, my family. That's always stuck in the back of my head, you know, from the time I'm going back 40 years.
No,
and
there
are a lot of
Chris
people who embrace that.
That's what Chris said himself. I mean, yeah, you know, a lot of people who understand that. People understand that. You know, the kid who killed the girl out in Utah, whatever, he probably told his parents, I'm going to go out to the woods and commit suicide. And they covered for him. You know, this kid who just recently shot up the school in Michigan. Parents doing the same thing. Apparently they seem like they're covering for him because they were damn sure on the run. So they must have been covering for him. So, you know, and countless many other times when parents do that for their kids. So, you know, that's the heart. That's family. And like I said, on that one clip, Chris said that. That's my brother. I'm going to have to be there for him. And you know, I don't think there's any human that doesn't understand that, particularly those that have family members that make it a heavy lift to to be there for them, you know. So, you know, people who doesn't understand that, but some of the stuff I think you're talking about, some of the stuff.
You know,
there's a certain amount of inside baseball that shit, stuff like that has been going on for years that people say we've been hearing about it, and certain media people say it's been bandied about and all that. Yeah, you guys hear about it because you cover the, you know, the press covers government, the press that covers government or whatever, just press going to be in place, you know, just that lifestyle is going to expose you to information before the general public, right? Years before the general public. So something like that, if it continues on and catches fire, clearly eventually it's going to blow up, right? And that caught fire, and just like with Bill Cosby, you know, people have been hearing stuff for years, and he had that reputation for years, but it was kind of semi-inside baseball, you know, the general public, broad public, really didn't know about it. And once that starts heating up from like a plain fire type of thing, then eventually it's going to catch up. So, you know, and, you know, people who aren't paying attention or aren't, you know, running in those circles, you know, really in like leadership circles or covering the leaders of society, stakeholders, you're not going to know about that stuff, you know? I mean, that's to a certain degree another percentage of America, right? I mean, what percentage can we say of America is actually educated and aware of the issues? What, maybe 40%? It's definitely not the majority. So then we're dealing with...
That's sad.
And of that 40%, what's making a good livelihood and is going to go to charity events and this and Broadway and this and that and really be cultured and aware of, you know what I'm saying? What percentage of that is going to really be those type of individuals to be the active members of a society, i.e. being the ones who actually are the final decision makers, i.e. swing voters, so to speak. You know what I mean? Because everybody else is either going to be sheep or their minds are already made up, right? I mean, you know, Trump are sheep. You know, you see these people talking about, you know, when they went to Dallas because they thought JFK was going to come back and say that Donald Trump should be president. That's crazy. although you do have people like our age who don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. So people, I mean, for years, calling those people conspiracy theorists when everybody knows, come on, that's no way that happened. That dude, you know. But now as it comes out, everybody's like, no, Lee didn't do that alone. Come on, but they don't even want to. They don't even. That's not even a question that's brought up anymore because it's such a bullshit. It was such a bullshit, you know, made up, fabricated tale, the way they used them. At one point, right, people were that believed that were, I think, almost considered similar to the QAnon people. And and knowing some of the things that the nefarious things that have been done in the name of country or by over aggressive power brokers or servants, civil servants, or like a J. Edgar Hoover building a whole COINTEL program against a race of people, you know. So, you know, if you get individuals like that who are triggering society to go a certain way, you know, then there's only a few individuals that really know what's up.
I agree, and that's the one thing that worries me now. You know, society. There's a segment of our society that is influenced by social media and the conventional stuff, and they're going in a direction that this country can ill afford to be going in. You know, and that's what, you know, I think about. We got rid of one problem. But Lord knows we created another, or not to say we, but in a ubiquitous sense. But the thing is that, you know, they're not going down without a fight. And we need to mass and arm ourselves. You said something earlier about Biden and the pace he's going with regard to certain things that are on his agenda. I understand it. You know, it's not, he's representing the country, not just black people. You know, he's done things. I know. Had it not been for our community, he probably would not have been where he is. But at the end of the day, you know, he is who he is now. And I guess we have to be patient, you know?
Well, I mean, also, it's about the votes. I mean, you know, it's about getting the thing through. I mean, you know, you can try to do certain things and put some on an agenda. But if you don't have, I learned that from my uncle a long time ago. At the end of the day, it's about adding up the votes. And if you don't get the votes, and on top of that, then it's the strategic chess game of how to get those votes and help certain, you know, get what you want.
Well,
so
Democrats have got to, you know, circle the wagons now. I mean, I wish your cousin was here to maybe just wax some poetry on what's going on behind the scenes so we could, you know, get a feeling that, you know, I'm not saying that I'm not hopeful. But sometimes when I see the shots that are being fired and we're all in the same party, I'm just saying, now, wait a minute, you know, what's this about, you know?
Right.
We can't afford to just, you know, be going back and forth at each other when the other side is just waiting. They're, you know, they're ripe for the taking, you know. Can you imagine if Jim Jordan replaced Nancy Pelosi? I mean, or Kevin McCarthy? I mean, it these things...
You know,
are situations that, you know, we have to grapple with.
You know, the idealists always suffer from a lack of pragmatism, right? I mean, you know, they come in the these people with these extreme progressive, and that's everybody's progressive, but you know, just like extreme right, they're at you. But how much of it are you going to actually be able to get done? You know, I mean,
exactly.
At the end of the day. Unless we can be extremely progressive when we have all the juice and the power and all of those people who want to have that litmus test are able to produce a whole bunch of people out in the streets to vote again on a consistent basis that moves like an army the way the Republican base moves. Because they truly move, you know, systematically and uniform. And until the Democrats get to that point, then it really doesn't make sense to try and like you said, fight each other and accuse each other of not reaching or passing some sort of litmus test, you know. And it really pisses me off when you have younger people coming in and they start accusing some of the older people. I'm not talking about the ones who are. There might be some people who've been there and just coasting and are not really contributing to the cause, but there are also some There are also some who have been there for a long time and who have been there during the civil rights era and should be given the respect mm-hmm. as being some of the leaders, honored leaders, and respect given as elders of the movement. And the fact that you're in there and you're young, you're making it happen, that's cool, but you should recognize that because you shouldn't believe the hype of all these people that call themselves progressive that might not look like you, that have the luxury to be progressive or not, right?
Right.
Because you don't have the luxury. You have to, by definition, you're progressive. Your very existence, your blackness in America makes you progressive, makes you anti-establishment. My cousin has an opponent running against him, calling him establishment. And my response to that is, I said, a black kid born in Newark in the early 60s, in a pre-riot Newark, New Jersey, is by definition anti-establishment. You know, so you know, how can you know people come into the mix? And I understandably, you want to join the fight, you want to get in, but understand the history of it and understand who's
exactly.
who and who's who in terms of you know you feeling a certain way and also a way to go about it. I mean, you know, there's a way to go about things if you think somebody's not representing the community and doing the things they need to do. But also, too, you got to understand where you're coming from, what your motives are, too. I mean, I know mm-hmm. that it might have become fashionable to be a young hotshot and a young best of America type, best that America has to offer, the best and the brightest running for office, inspired by the likes of a generation of Barack Obama being in the office. So I'm going to run out there, and I'm going to run for office, too, just like Barack and you know, and sometimes sometimes people got to play their position. Sometimes it's not about you; it's about the cause. You know, so you know, so everybody can't. You know, if sometimes you got a good representative that's already in there, then you got to really, question yourself: why do I want that job? You know, and I thought could run for product. I can run for office sometime. Let me run for senator, because my name is Payne and a woo woo. But then my senator's pretty cool. I like the job that Cory Booker is doing. You know, Menendez, he's doing a good job too, okay. But I like the job that Cory Booker is doing. Or I like, if I'm liking the person, I'm going to play my position and find out there's other areas of community involvement and community giving back where I can help, where you can contribute.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems to be, you know, and misdirected in some cases to want to be involved.
Well, I think there's a certain narcissistic behavior on the part of some that feel, well, gee, you know, why him, why not me?
Right.
And my thinking is that if that person, he or she is doing the right thing, then, as you just said, they should not be replaced. But, you know, when you look at the history of Barack Obama, I mean, he did so much on a volunteer level before he even got into the lofty height of being a U.S. senator and all that business. And and I'll never forget, you know, the first time I heard him speak, I knew that the whole political dynamic and construct of black politics as far as on the national level had changed, that we're no longer going to have, and I hate to refer them as handkerchief heads, but there were people that would just go on there and just say, hey, you know, I am this because of all that I've done. Now you have a completely different perspective coming from a source of education. Somebody's
gotta go
culture.
Got to go, Wayne. You get
is
the
it
last
that time
word.
Already?
Yes,
already?
Yes. You get the last word, my brother. Got to go. 10 seconds.
Hey, man. Keep hope alive. That's all. We'll
right.
continue
Thanks.
This next week, hopefully.
My brother. That's Wayne.
All right.
I'm Eric Citizen Payne. This is Kay, son of the friends. We had a good, long discussion. Last word goes to Wayne Gilman. And we're going to say keep hope alive, like Brother Jesse Jackson used to say, as we try to work it out.